Hi, it's Rebecca Bruton. You may know me from my usual podcast, The Drop and the Turning. You might also know me as a composer and performing musician, or perhaps as the current artistic director of New Works Calgary. Today I'm sharing an artist interview in a new, shorter format. As The Drop and the Turning winds down, I'll be sharing more short-form artist Q&As with the artists we're featuring on the New Works Calgary live performing seasons. As many of these artists travel from out of town to share their art in Calgary, we feel this is an accessible way to offer a window into each artist's thought and practice. I'm calling this new podcast Traceries. You can find it here on CJSW and on the New Works Calgary website, alongside our written interviews by Jesse Locke. I'd welcome your feedback. Please write to artisticdirector@newworkscalgary.com to share your thoughts.
On prend le risque. On plonge tout naturellement.
J'avais 15 ans
dans
et je regardais
la
réa.
Today, I'll be speaking with Montreal-based composer and multidisciplinary artist Messi Noor Simone Henry, whose work you just heard. Simone will be traveling to Calgary on March 21st, 2023, as part of a 7-person ensemble to perform their new experimental opera, Le Désert Mauve, based on the novel by the same name, by visionary lesbian writer Nicole Brossard. They will perform the work on March 23rd and 24th at the C-Space Theatre. Visit newworkscalgary.com for more information and tickets.
Comme s'il s'agissait d'une catégorie valable d'un paysage adéquat.
La
réalité
empruntée sur les êtres nabondés comme les distorsions tragiques. C'est le vice caché de la violence ou l'égalité de
So my name is Simone Henry. I also go by the name Messi Noor Simone Henry. I use the pronoun they, and I work between the fields of music, poetry, and visual arts. I don't really understand the concept of separate disciplines, artistic disciplines. So I learned to talk about it in terms of intersection between those three. But in my mind, it's all about working with humans and community and intertwining things and experiences.
So how did you first get into creating your own music and art?
I started playing piano when I was very young. It was kind of it was something very important for my parents because they were working very hard to do this social escalator thing. Because my father comes from Egypt, a very, very poor family, and my mother comes from rural Quebec, also from a very popular milieu, and piano has seemed to be a very standard thing, at least in Quebec, to show that you were getting upwards in the class class system. So yeah, I did not have a choice to do piano. It was like a mandatory social rising experience. And I hated it till one day I got to, I don't know, subvert my relationship to the piano, and it became kind of my way to express and to say lots of things that were not admissible in the context of my entourage that was very conservative and very strict. And more and more I started to improvise on the piano, and my improvisation were totally not accepted in my piano classes, but nonetheless they were kind of my, they became my safe space more and more. And from one thing leading to the other, I became a classical pianist, and I studied in classical piano at university, and I was doing some kind of scribbling on paper, little drawings to remember my improv, because I had very poor memory. And at some point, those little scribblings became more and more important in my creative life. And I was also writing poetry at the same time. And over the course of like 20, 25 years, those things started to make sense together and became what I'm doing most of the time. That took the centerpiece of my creative process.
It sounds like the poetic part, your love of poetry and your love of doing visual work, really emerged from an organic and untrained process.
Definitely. I was also, you know, this very classic bookworm, always reading too much advanced stuff way too early. I had, you know, a fixation on Victor Hugo when I was like 12 or something, and I read like all Les Misérables, and I was obsessed with the, you know, the Notre Dame de Paris, and that was not 12-year-old stuff, but you know, and it became, yeah, part of my of the fabric of my work, yeah.
So can you please describe the opera that you'll be presenting in Calgary on March 23rd and 24th?
Yeah, this opera has been a long time coming. It's an opera called Le Désert Mauve, or Mauve Desert in English. It's based on a novel by the iconic lesbian and feminist figure Nicole Brossard. And actually, I got to know the book because a friend of mine handed it to me and said, you know, you need to read this. It's one of the most important book that was ever written. I was like, okay, you're pushing it probably a bit, but okay, let's read it. And I completely fell in love with the writing, with the fiction of this book, and actually the fiction that is very alternative. It was written in 1986, published in 1986, and it's a book presenting a character called Mélanie, and Mélanie is a teenager living with her mother and her mother's partner in Arizona. And in this book, it's totally okay in the 1980s that two women are having an out relationship in the middle of the Arizona desert, and they own a hotel, a motel, and there is all those lesbian characters revolving around them, and it's that's the actual fictional part that is very interesting. Nicole Brossard wrote a reality in which it would be just normal to be normal and accepted and to be queer. And yeah, and those characters evolve in this the setting of this Arizona desert, and Mélanie every night she takes her mother's car and dives into the desert to feel like things out of curiosity and out of a thirst to be alive. And she just like grabs the sensations, and one thing leading to the other, she starts to write, and she starts to discover that writing actually takes the place of reality, because it creates all the possibilities of, you know, embodying the possibilities of the universe, and she's just completely plunged in that. And then, there's this first book in the book called Mauve Desert, and it was the story of Mélanie and her mother and her partner. And then when you read the book, at some point it stops and you realize, oh, it was a book in the book. And there's a second part, which is the story of a translator in Montreal, French-speaking translator, who falls in love with this novel, with the story of Mélanie, and she decides to translate it. And actually in the book, it's a translation from the French to French. And the third part of the book is actually the translation. So this whole book, and by extension my opera, is about how reality is all goes through our perception and gets slightly transformed by the personality of the person who's getting the reality in their face, you know, who's going through reality. And that's also what I did in my opera. I translated this incredible book into sound, into a sound world.
I'm so curious about, well, first of all, I would love to hear a little bit more about what is the instrumentation for it, and how do the visuals and the text play into this?
So there's three voices. There's two voices that will embody Mélanie. So Mélanie from the first version of the book and Mélanie from the second version of the book. And there's a narrator. And they're accompanied by three instruments. So it's a horn, korg, and cello, amplified cello with lots of electronic effects. And the score is quite particular, because it's all visual score. There's not a single black note or white note on lines handed to the musicians. So it's only drawings that I do. And I've been doing those kind of drawings for 15 years now, and I've developed a very precise way of notating, especially noise and noise music, in the way of graphic scores. And those graphic scores, actually, they look very abstract, and they are presented actually to the public. They become kind of the scenic habillage for the opera. But at the same time, they are very precise, they are understood by the musicians through a set of codes that are quite intuitive. For instance, every color in the score relates to one instrument, or the higher a graphic element is on the page, the higher pitched it is, the lower it's lower in range. The more vivid the color, the louder it is, the more translucid or soft, the softer the sound, and things like that. So it's kind of it's a type of score that is very precise to my mind, because I have synesthesia, so for me those drawings are actually very, very precise sounds. But I love how, conversing with the musicians, they become just a vessel for collaborative work, and the piece is very, very much influenced by the personality and the very different backgrounds of every musician.
So based on what you've told me about the novel, there's a sense for me that it's not traditionally narrative. It's sort of spiralic or meta in that there's this text within a text. And I'm wondering if you could talk about how you would define story or meaning as it relates to your creation, which is very multi-layered through the different disciplines.
Actually, I think that was one of the first thing that I had to deconstruct. When I was, trained as a classical pianist, something that would come over and over again was this idea that a music piece is a story that has a beginning, that has a relationship between tension and release, that has a climax, and then unfolds to a conclusion, and maybe a coda afterwards. And that music needed this direction. It's true when you performed a Mozart sonata, for instance. It's the way it's built. It's very narrative. But when I was doing my improv or anytime I was trying to do not anything creative, this type of narrative was absolutely not instinctive to me. I never thought in those terms. And it took me years to understand that music does not have to be teleological, does not need this dramatic direction. So I started to really embrace the fact that the way I love to enjoy music and the way I love to write it is more about creating a situation. So when I'm writing, the first thing I do is actually imagine the sound world, the sound universe, the poetic universe of the piece. So what belongs in the piece, what does not belong in the piece, and how the musical characters interact with one another. And any of my pieces I've written in my whole life, I think, is always about just, okay, this is the planet I've created, the universe I've created, and okay, let's have a look inside. Oh, that's what's happening between those characters today, and let's follow them a bit, and oh, let's go have a look on the other continent, what's going on there. And that's also the way I've built my opera. I didn't follow, the book in itself does not have a teleological structure, but it has a, you know, a three parts structure, very, very well constructed, and I decided not to follow that structure neither. The way the opera is structured is more, okay, we'll have a look at the character Angela. What about Angela? Oh, let's think about Angela for 20 minutes. Okay, it took way too much time in the opera to be just thinking about Angela, but, you know, that's our experience of the opera today. Let's have a moment about thinking about reality in the context of the book. So there's there are a whole movement about just reality, the concept of reality. And there's another movement about Melanie going in the desert. And that's the way I feel at best for to welcome the public, the audience in my sound world.
So I understand that you've gotten to know Nicole Brossard a little bit through this process, and I'm curious what it was like for you to work with her in bringing her text to life.
Oh, it has been amazing. Actually, when I read the book, I didn't know how important she was for the literary community, or how emblematic she was for the lesbian community and also for just for the literary world. I had no clue. I came from a very non-culture oriented background, so I had never heard the name Nicole Brossard before reading the book, and I found, oh, it's a very nice book. And I was writing at that time a poetry collection. And it had been refused in like 40 edition publishers. So I was like, okay, I need to work more on it. And I just asked Nicole, I wrote Nicole, I found her email, and I asked her, okay, would you, you know, I like your book, would you like to give me some feedbacks? And she was just so generous. She said, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, let's take a coffee. And when I told that to my friends, they were like, what? You're meeting with Nicole Brossard? I was like, oh. That's okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize how, you know. we've been in dialogue since that time, which is 2011, and we've been doing lots of projects since that time. And Nicole is probably the most curious and open-minded person I've known. She's a couple of generation older than me, and you know, she's lived through it all and all the fights, and when she was young, being lesbian or trans or neurodivergent were all considered mental illnesses, and she's been in all those fights to also, you know, get rights for a woman, and she's seen it all. and even though she's seen all that, she's still extremely curious about the preoccupations of the very, very young generations, and always very curious about, you know, she knows more about Gen Z than I do, and it's incredible when I'm talking to her to see how still very curious about the world she is. And it's been the same working with the Oprah. We've been working quite close together since the beginning. And she's just so open-minded, and she brings me to think about the characters in new ways. And she's never afraid to tell me, okay, this proposition you have about Melanie's mother, it's just wrong. It doesn't work. But she never says it in a sufficient way. She says it in, like, that's just not the character. Just, you know, let's talk about it. And to this day, because now I'm working in different stages on this Oprah, and this one is like the third version. And we're starting to work on the fourth version, and she's still always so open-minded to be okay. What's the next step, Simon? Bring it on. let's have a beer and talk about it.
Excited about in touring this opera and bringing it outside of Quebec?
It's so exciting to bring it out of the context of creation. I mean, it's funny how this opera has been presented a lot in Quebec City a few time, and I come from Montreal or Jujage, and in Montreal it has been harder to present it, and now you've welcomed it with open arms in Calgary, and I'm so excited to bring those words, those voices. I'm so excited to present all those incredible people that are touring with me in Alberta, and just getting the conversation started between us and the public, the audience in your city. And it's, I have to admit, I know nothing about Calgary. I won't pretend I know something, and that's very exciting for me. I mean, of course, I have, you know, some general cliche knowledge, but apart from that, I'm just, you know, super open-minded and looking forward to see how we will resonate with your audience, and also with the French speaking audience in Calgary, and that's very exciting.
So, final question: are you yourself performing in opera, and if so, on what instrument?
Actually, I stopped performing 15 years ago when I finished my classical pianist training. I started to have the shake, and that's something I realized is not talked a lot about. You know, I had performance anxiety, so when I was doing concerts, my hands were shaking like super hard, and I realized that I had two options: stop playing for a while and go into therapy, or taking pills, like lots of people do. And I mean, I totally understand both directions, but I chose to stop performing and go into therapy. And it took me 15 years to go back to the instrument. So I started playing back only during the pandemics in 2020. I'm rediscovering how fun it is when the context is safer. And in the opera, I've started performing, but not on the piano. I've been performing on the graphic scores, because there's this incredible human, Alex Burton, who programmed for me a machine that permits me to remix in real time the graphic scores of Desarmov in relationship with what the musicians are playing. So I've been doing that for the version in Quebec City and in Montreal City. Montreal City, that's a funny way to put it. So in Montreal. And that has been absolutely amazing. But we decided to record it, to record this graphic score improv, to bring it on tour. So in Alberta, I'll have the happiness of just pushing on the space bar at the beginning of the show and listen to it. But I'm starting to think that maybe for the next version, I'll bring back the piano somewhere, because I'm planning maybe on a longer version of the opera, and seeing maybe if, you know, the piano has some part to play in that. But we'll see.
Amazing. Well, we are so excited to welcome you here. And I personally can't wait to see and hear the opera. It's one of the really exciting parts of musicians touring. Especially, like, I love the Quebec and Montreal art scene and music scene, and it's really nice. It's really exciting to be able to access a little bit of it here in Alberta once in a while. So, yeah, we can't wait to have you. And
I mean, to give a voice to that music and to those, you know, to queer literature and trans music. So, thank you so much.
Opéra Le Désert Mauve will show in Calgary on March 23rd and 24th, 2023, in the Sea Space Theatre. Simon Henri will also offer a workshop on interdisciplinary creation on March 21st in the Theatre Encounter space. Go to newworkscalgary.com for further information and to buy tickets.